and everyone for part two of the Wonderful Chain Theater One Act Festival. We have four amazing artists here to share their works with us. And of course, as I mentioned, they're all part of the Chain Theater's One Act Festival, which is happening now through September 1st at the Chain Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting chaintheater.org. We've got some familiar faces, some new faces, but all in all, some wonderful works to share with you. And joining us to talk about these wonderful works, we've got the playwright Annie Razko to talk about her show, Soured Milk, the playwright and director Z. Quinn Reynolds and their show, Where the Socks Go. Returning, we've got the playwright Kyle Mumford and his show, Hangman. And welcoming in today, the director Lee Zayas and her show, Online Dates Are Hard to Handle. A wonderful eclectic mix of shows. So let's not waste any more time in hearing me ramble on. Let's go ahead and welcome on our guests, Annie, Z, Kyle, Lee. Welcome in to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so happy to have you all here. It's good to see familiar faces. It's wonderful to see new faces. But more importantly, I'm so excited to learn more about these shows. What fantastic titles is all I'm going to start out by saying. If you were looking to write a title that is eye-catching, you've already succeeded. 10 points to Gryffindor. But I want to start by having you all tell our listeners a little bit about what your shows are about. So Annie, can we start with you and your show, Soured Milk?
Sure. So the premise for the show started when I walk into my faculty room in September and I see a microwave sitting on a chair plugged into a wall, not a table, just on a chair, loose. And then there was milk in the fridge, I think, from June. And I was like, I'm going to save this image and this will be kind of cool for a play. And then every December, we go to Manhattan Theater Club for Theater Link training. So it's about 15 teachers from all over the world. We're given a play as a home base, as a mentor text. And then we write kind of like a mini version of our own to then turnkey to students. And then they write a show, they give it to another school, they perform it live, and we perform theirs live on Zoom. And through that program and working with those teaching artists there and that staff has given me the confidence to be a playwright. Like, I've taken the lessons I've learned to teach and then I just apply them to myself. And so that's given me that confidence. So when we were we're working with Dominique Morisseau's Skeleton Crew, and it's a unit set where characters cross the line. So we, in turn, were supposed to work together with like six other teachers and in an hour, write the first scene. It's a unit set, characters can't go anywhere. They can just come in and out of the room. And one of the characters or multiple characters have to cross the line. And so the varying degrees of crossing the line. So I saved that image. And in working with a couple of other teachers that I just want to give a shout out to. So AJ Casey from Kentucky, Chris Coulter from Tennessee, Jing Lim from Singapore, Jody Hill from Greece, and Sean Hennessy from Oregon. I'm like, guys, can we just, we're all teachers. Can we just set our unit set in a faculty room? And they're like, great. And then working with playwright and teaching artist Chris Sarasso, he kind of asked us to be more specific and delve deeper. And it's like, what else is in the room? Oh, there's a broken lamp from Goodwill. Great. Is that from somebody's house? Yes. And so it was a magical process where you get a lot of strong personalities and it could either be brilliant or, you know, the apocalypse. And it was just a lot of yes anding and like piggybacking off of each other. So we came up with these characters and we came up with the first scene. And then I was just so inspired that as I was coming home, I emailed all of them. I'm like, do I have your permission? I'm feeling really inspired. Can I finish this play? Or at least there's no such thing as being finished, right? It's either published or you find an interesting place to stop. And so I was nervous because they could have said no. And they're like, no, go with it, run with it. So they're still attached to the project so they could see updates and then give feedback. And so it's cool. So it's written, it started with like a collaborative effort and then I finished it.
That is incredible. What a journey.
Yeah.
Quinn, tell us a little bit about your show, Where the Socks Go.
Yeah. So it's kind of based on like the Nordic folklore of the Nissa, which is kind of a house sprite that is the one responsible for stealing socks and loose change and rings and things of that nature. And I had the idea about it. Whenever I get an idea like from folklore or something like that, I'm like, okay, great. How can I make this like 500% worse? So I was like, okay, what if there is a creature that steals things, and what if it stole people? And then I got onto the concept of like, how do things get lost? And I kind of feel like losing something is kind of a personal decision of like when you decide to stop looking for it. So I kind of connected that general concept, how queer people are treated by their families. So it's about that. It's about people being lost on purpose, and then the cycle of predation that occurs in those sort of missing spaces.
That sounds amazing. Great, great story there. Building off that, let's welcome back playwright Kyle Mumford. Tell us about your show, Hangman.
Yeah, so let me start with this, is that I always find myself, the stuff I write about sometimes comes from a very dark place, and how sometimes when you're in a dark place, light kind of seeps its way in the funniest ways. And I always like how to balance drama with comedy, because it's closer to real life. And so Hangman came from the idea of just a man who in his 60s goes to the middle of the woods, Vermont woods, deep woods, to end his life. And he's just feeling lonely. He doesn't have anybody, kind of closed off from the world, drives, hikes this big tree to end his life. And right before he does, 10 feet away is a 20-year-old young kid about to do the same thing. And this kind of awkward situation kind of turns the tide for both of them, especially the older man, having not really kind of closed himself off to others. So it's very funny. It's dark, but it's funny. And I found it just trying to be as human as possible with it and bringing light to kind of how we all think we're alone, but then, you know, randomly somehow, you know, something just happens and we realize we're not. And so, yeah, that's kind of Hangman in a nutshell, if you will. And yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. I did not see that twist coming. I love it. And rounding us out on this group, we've got the fabulous director Lee Zayas and her show Online Dates Are Hard to Handle. Can you tell us a little bit about this gripping Russian drama?
Yeah, sure. It's about two friends who meet up for drinks after work, and one's really excited about something that's going on at work, and then the other one is kind of bummed out about a great date that he had the night before, but he's bummed out because the date, she's missing a hand, and he can't get over it. And so, you know, that's basically what the conversation is about, him trying to figure out how to get past this perfect woman without a hand.
That is a fascinating premise, though. I love that. All of your shows, this sounds so fantastic. I'm already hooked. You got me on the title. Now you got me on the synopsis. I want to dive a little bit further into your works now. And Quinn, can I start first with you? I would love to know, what inspired you to pen this piece?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was inspired by like a bit of folklore. I had originally written the show. Do you mind if I combine the next two questions? But I'd originally written this show as part of a festival that for a company I've been working with for the past 2 years, Spit and Vigor Theater, which is a horror theater company. So I've been collaborating with them for a while. And I actually wrote this show specifically for the use of Dummy, who's in the show. His name's Brendo. He's made by the artist Pandora Gastelum. He's a fantastic dead fellow made of a Home Depot skeleton. So really, I wrote the show for that festival. And, you know, to use this friendo person, you have to see him. He's hilarious. He's dead. He's green, somewhat metallic. And then that festival never ended up happening for various reasons, how things tend to fall apart. But I had the show. So I was like, well, got to do something with it. So I brought it to this festival.
That is fantastic. I love the creativity involved with this too. That's wonderful. Lee, tell us what inspired you to get involved, or how you came across this piece.
Well, I'm friends with the playwright, Matt McLaughlin. And we have been talking for about a year now about me directing one of his one acts. And one night he just randomly texted me, hey, do you want to direct this? Because you have some dark humor and I think that you could make this funny. And so he literally didn't have to ask me. He could have just been like, hey Lee, you're gonna do this, and I would have been, all right, cool. So that's how I got into this. I've been waiting for a project to do, and this just fell on my lap.
Fabulous. Annie, tell us, you kind of touched on how the development of the show happened and whatnot, but what exactly was the spark, the inception of this piece?
Well, I think like during the pandemic, I think teachers were like heroes for maybe like a week, right? And then we went back to being villains, and you know, you have people that are telling you how to do your job. And so kind of borrowing Dominique Marceau's process, like she works from the macro to the micro, which is something very different for me as a playwright. I usually start with like character first and then kind of figure out where do these characters live. But her process for some plays is different. So she started with Skeleton Crew, for example. She was like, I wanna write about Detroit and I wanna write about a stamping plant. Now I don't know anything about a stamping plant, so I'm gonna do some research. And then this phrase, I think, like made the back of my hairs or back of my neck, hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Whose bodies does this story live on? And I just loved that phrasing. So I knew I wanted to write about a faculty room. I knew I had the image of the sour milk in the fridge, which will serve as a metaphor for aging later, and the microwave on the chair. But then it's like, well, whose bodies does the story live on? Who needs to be here? You have a principal. You have the older teacher who is starting to show signs of early onset dementia. You have the hippie granola new teacher who comes in with sage and juice cleanse smoothies and wants to do teacher yoga and has that like vigor to like, I want to change the world, right? And then you have like the grizzled, like 40-year-old cynical teacher that I get to play, whose characteristic catchphrase is F that, but with the rest of the word. And that's actually my first line in the play, where it's like, nope, that's not going to work. That doesn't work here. And so I also kind of loosely based it. It's like, it's a love letter to my school as well. And I kind of loosely like brought in personalities of teachers that I've worked with over the years and kind of infused them into these characters. And so that's been the process.
Incredible. Wow. Hitting all those buttons in education right there. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, and then also I added a thing in between scenes to show the passage of time, right? Because, you know, we're in a beautiful theater, but we don't have projections. And I've been learning to go more minimalism with less set and less stuff. So in between each scene is a voiceover based upon the proud moms of Facebook who are trying to, you know, get certain teachers fired. And those, the excuses I have, like Siri's voice, like at Boy Mom, March 25th, 1:15 p.m. And like I've done, and so it's a practice in voiceover work as well. So I've given my best like vocal fry, like, oh my God. And one of the excuses I got was like, I should give a student a 90 because he has an 89 and he wants to be on the honor roll. And I was like, well, no, he earned an 89. The grades were due. I'm sorry. And then the excuse I got back was, but he has asthma. And I'm like, well, so do I. So grab an albuterol inhaler and hope for the best. So those are like peppered in. Another one is an excuse. A parent complained that a teacher was writing with their left hand on the board and it was confusing the right-handed kids. So they need to stop. And then I talked too fast and I used too big of words and I made their child feel dumb. And when I asked what the word was, they said amicable. And I'm like, well, that's one of their vocab words. So that's why I was using it in the classroom. So it's kind of like a way back to kind of show like a little bit of a satire to show the ridiculousness of some parents and then sort of the realities that teachers face.
Fascinating. Yes. Now, Kyle, I would really love to know what inspired you to pen this show with such a great twist.
Well, it's, I guess... It's so funny because I feel like it's just a theme of mine is dark comedy or dramedies where a character just finds himself in a really dark spot and something really awkward but yet funny happens to him. If you read my works, you'll see that recurring theme often. A while ago, I was collaborating on a mini series for Instagram, and we created like kind of a project about two kind of lovers on the run a little bit. And my contribution for the first episode was that idea of like two people awkwardly meeting each other during their darkest point of time of, you know, jumping off a bridge, but they ended up falling in love. It never really went anywhere. And so I like kind of took the idea and I was like, where can I take this now that I'm a little older and gone through a lot of experience, not only myself, but family and friends around me. And I just saw how sometimes people who have, you know, severe anxieties that are just angry at the world or alone, you know, they are kind of in this shell and they don't branch out, thus the older man in his 60s. And, you know, I saw that. And I saw once you kind of open up your world a little bit, you realize you're less alone. And I just, that's kind of started like a year ago. I just said, you know what, I'm going to retract this idea and make it something of its own now. And that's just built upon that way. You know, yeah, I love human conditions, as most writers do, but I love really deep diving into it to kind of breaking down layers. And I just explore these two characters, not only based on myself, but like I said, based on people I've known who've gone through tough times. And just kind of, like I said, a writer to me is someone who goes out and reports and comes back and kind of holds up a mirror to society of like what they see. Yeah. And so I did that, you know, mixture of experience, love of comedy, and a little bit of heart.
That's wonderful. I want to use that to jump off into my next question, which, Kyle, I'm going to start with you first. And I'm curious to know, is there a message or a thought you hope that audiences take away from your piece?
So a lot of messages. Find the funny in life. I think that's kind of a lifesaver, if you will. Find the comedy in life and, you know, enjoy it. I know it's hard sometimes, but find the funny in the awkward, the funniness and the awkwardness of it, and enjoy the awkwardness of it. So yeah, that's kind of my message, if you will. And also, you know, when you think you're alone, I mean, look around the corner because something funny is going to happen and something will lift you right away. You know, just my thought.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's beautiful. Lee, what about you? What is the message or thought you're hoping that audiences take away from your piece?
Well, the piece was not meant to make fun of anyone with a disability at all. It's actually more geared toward making fun of the guy who can't really get a handle of the situation, pun intended. I hope the audience just takes away to be more open-minded and not like just geared towards people who just fit the mold and have more of an open mind, and just really reflect on what they view as red flags could really potentially be their own red flags. So, you know, just it can have different messages, but definitely not geared toward making fun of anyone except for these two guys who are kind of a little challenged sometimes.
I love that. That's such a great idea. I truly love that. Quinn, with such a powerful piece, I mean, I love what you've done with this. Forgive me, it was a Nordic legend, I think you were mentioning. What is the message or thought you hope that people take away from your show?
Protect trans kids. Abuse is a cycle. Have a good time. The show's actually really funny. I know I haven't really made that point yet, but, you know, have a good time with it. Get weird.
I love that. That's my favorite, like, tagline. Annie, I want to kick up our final question with you, and I would love to know, with such, in my opinion, a relatable story, you know, who are you hoping to have access to your work?
I think for me, it's just, I think anyone that's been in a classroom, anyone that's either been in that student or teacher capacity who has learned things, I think that matters. And then just to see too, I think the power of that community has, right? I have a book and I haven't read it yet, but I bought it because I feel like I need the title. It's called Work Won't Love You Back. And I think sometimes for us as artists too, like that is work, but we love it. And then how can you cultivate sort of a life outside? Because one of my characters doesn't have kids, has six cats. And then my character, Barbara, says to her, like, six cats does not a child make. And that idea of like, she needs this job because this is her community. This is her home. Without it, she just goes back to like an empty apartment. So what is home and work and those type of boundaries? So anybody that also maybe has those struggles of living at work or living for work, this is the show for you. And also to make sure to clean out your fridge, because sometimes things stay in there and get gross and you need to throw them away.
That's wonderful. Lee, what about you? Who are you hoping to have access to your work?
Anyone who we can challenge a view on. I love reaching to closed view people, like just challenging whatever they think and going in the opposite direction. Let's go for it. So that's about it. It's very simple.
I love you. You and Quinn, you're in the same party together. I love this. Speaking of Quinn, Who were you hoping to have access to your piece?
The public at large. I don't know. Those are for everybody. I don't really. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe old people. Maybe parents. I don't know. Kids.
Come one, come all. Come see a great show. Kyle, bring us home on this. Who are you hoping to have access to your piece?
I mean, I don't want to say it's cliche to say everyone, but, you know, I think everyone who, you know, I think we're all closed off in some, you know, part of our lives, or we don't, you know, talk about certain things, or we think we're kind of know it all, but we don't. I don't know. I feel like, you know, anybody who's kind of feeling like, you know, there's a part of their world or life they aren't really sharing. And, you know, some people don't say a thing. We go our whole lives not knowing, you know, a person's deep, deep, you know, concerns. I don't know, anybody around that aspect of someone who is holding on to something they're not sharing, and then just, you know, I don't know, find something funny, but yet relatable in the story that they can go, you know, I'm going to talk to my buddy I haven't talked to in a while, or maybe I should share this with somebody that I've been feeling, or stuff like that, you know.
Second part of our interviews, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit more. Pick your brains, if you will. And with such a full house, I want to skip right to my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory? Or Annie and Kyle, in your case, what is another of your favorite theater memories? Yes, Annie, go ahead and kick us off.
There's way too many to choose from, but I think one that's kind of jumping out to me at the moment is when I went through the audition process and I got into Moms the Musical, which had a Broadway Investors Workshop in 2021. And it was written by Kelly Surrett and directed by Victoria Ray Sook. And it was one of those things where it's like, okay, we're going to do an industry showcase at the end of July. You're cast May 31st, first rehearsals June 24th. You have to be off book memorized. And we thought it was a stage reading. And then when we show up, they're like, just kidding, it's going to be a fully fledged musical. So I had like a 19-hour rehearsal where I've learned 5 dances in one day. And I got to rap about motherhood and breast pumping. And I did research. I'm not a mom, nor have I ever breast pumped. But I asked my friends. And so it was cool. And it was stressful. And it was the first kind of like professional gig I had in New York. So it made me feel like, oh, now I'm a real actor because I'm going to Ripley Greer every day and doing all the things. But it was just a wonderful community. And I learned a lot for myself as a writer too, because I also have dreams and aspirations of writing a musical. So I've taken musical improv and I'm working on things and what have you. And I would eventually love to write a musical about education that doesn't sound like an after-school special or hokey. And Kelly had talked about why she wanted to write her show. And it was about how she was saying how when you look at theater and musical theater in particular, the mom is either kind of like the mentor character, or you have like the trope of the evil stepmom or the evil queen type of mother role. So and they're always the side character. So she wanted to make it at the forefront and make it more about women. And then she had dreams of like, okay, well, when it goes to Broadway, she wants to have like nursing stations built into the Broadway theaters and spaces where moms can bring their kids to the show and you'd have professional babysitters care while they get to watch, you know, sort of a reflection of themselves on stage. So hopefully that'll end up happening. But I think the friendships I've made and sort of just being in the room with when you're the smartest person in the room, or you're the most talented person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And I just felt like everyone was just so talented. You just leveled up naturally just by being in that space. And it was a very warm, creative, wonderful, wild journey.
That is such an awesome memory. What a story there. Wow. What an experience and a process. Crazy. Thank you for that. Who would like to go next? Yes, Kyle, hit us with it.
So my greatest, a lot of my theater memories are with my mother. She was the one who always took me to theater in the city. you know, and she's always loved theater. She's always loved the stage or live events. And when I think that if I could choose one in particular, I had to have been, and it's just such a funny thing now because I know her. She's a little bit of a very much an Italian mom who's always worried. I think the first show I ever did was like, I was 5 at a local theater and I was short. I mean, I'm short now, like, but like I was the shortest kid in the room and I was so eager and everything. And she was so worried because all the other kids were older than me. So it's kind of, I vaguely get memories of it once in a while, but she'd be watching each night, like really, really worried. But I was just like loving it. So that was like, I guess my first real kind of theater experience of just theater in general. But a little bit of a, you know, sweet moment, I guess, between mother and son.
That is sweet. And we love a good origin story. That's fabulous. Thank you. Lee, tell us about yours.
Well, I grew up in theater, so I have so many to choose from. I was lucky enough to like be a part of a lot of Stephen Gerges's plays when they first started out. And I was just the best memories are just sitting in on rehearsals while Philip Seymour Hoffman was directing these guys and watching them through the process of getting directed by him and acting and going through the motions and just falling in love with theater just by being there, being around those people. Yeah, if I can pick one play where I sat in rehearsal that I just fell in love with theater, it was Jesus Off the A-Train. Anything and everything would happen and every argument that could happen happened and they just used all that energy and it just made it so much better.
That is incredible. Wow. Thank you for that. Quinn, bring us home on this. What is your favorite theater memory?
Yeah, I feel like it's just sort of a genre of memory. I'm a creature of kind of base intentions and cheap thrills. I think I spend a lot of time writing, carefully constructing plays, but at the end of the day, the best moments are cheap gags and jokes. Like I'll spend all day doing something. I used to do immersive children's theater in a baseball stadium back when I worked in Buffalo. You know, and I spend tons of time crafting these intricate messages for the kids. But like, when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show up on like a golf cart throwing pizza boxes, like you can't fucking beat that. That's like an A-plus moment, you know? A green gorilla wrestles giant chicken wing. Awesome. Blood out of someone's neck. It spills on the whole audience and they hate it. Love that. So, you know, I'm going for gasps, cheap thrills. I think that's where it's really at. We can spend as much time as we want being artistic about it, but like, I'm here for a fucking reaction, you know?
I love that. That's wonderful. All of you, thank you so much for those wonderful memories. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do any of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline we might be able to plug for you? Yes, Annie, go ahead.
So in the spirit of like musical improv that I fell in love with, I took 2 classes at the Magna Theater and now I'm obsessed. Like, so if you give me a suggestion, someone starts playing, I could just sing a song for you. But I turned sort of a bad memory and I turned it good a couple weeks ago. I never got to play Annie in the musical Annie. And so instead of being sad about it, I was like, you know what? I'm going to double down and I'm going to play all of the parts in 10 minutes. So I did an abridged one-woman version of Annie. I had so many wigs and I bought fake puff cigarettes that didn't puff. So they literally were fake puff. And I also was nervous because I was like, oh, this feels like a vanity project. I don't know how audiences are going to receive it, but they loved it at the Players Theater. So I was like, oh, I think I found a niche. So then rather than waiting on the line for auditions, right? Part of why I love being an actor and a playwright is that like I get to write my own stuff and perform in it. So I'm now thinking about doing like future one-woman shows that were based on roles that I didn't get. So I'm just going to do all of them. So there might be coming down the pipeline a one-woman version of Little Shop of Horrors where I was the understudy for Audrey in high school and an ensemble member where my only line was 1/3 of the opening line on the 21st day of the month of September in a year not too long before our own. And that was it. But then I was done. So, and then Once Upon a Mattress, because that's topical because that's on Broadway right now. I did that my first show in high school and I got the bird and it said Nightingale of Samarkand, Annie Rasko. And I thought that that meant I was a special princess. So I go right up to the director, John Rathgam, and I go, Mr. Rathgam, does that mean I'm a special princess? And he's like, no, you're a bird. And that was it. So doing that. And then I've wanted to write music, but I've been too scared, or like I've made things and I feel like it's stupid, which is the exact opposite of what I tell my students to do. It's like, oh, mine that stuff for gold. And I'm the complete opposite. I'll write something and then delete it because it's horrible. So I live in a small town in New Jersey called Helmeta. And the mayor asked me if I wanted to sing at Helmeta Day on September 21st. And I said, I'll do you one better, Mayor Chris. I'm going to write a song for the town. And he's like, well, that'll really put us on the map. And I'm like, well, technically, we already are on the map because it's a town. Regardless. So I'm going to write a song. It's a backline tag song called Small Town Big Heart. And I'm going to debut it at Helmeta Day at the Pavilion with Mayor Chris and the town. The town itself is so small. It has no traffic lights and a pizza place. So there you go.
That got a lot on your plate, it sounds like. That's amazing. Yes. Yes, Kyle.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, I'll be brief with it. But yeah, I always have a few things always spinning. One of which is the play I did last year at the Chain One Act Theater Festival that you actually interviewed me with from Pudding. We've been kind of traveling around with it a little bit, which has been great. And we, this fall, hopefully are getting it out to do a reading of it in LA. So it's really cool. I'm excited to just kind of building it more than just the one act. And it's fun to see, you know, something that starts out small and just see it build and build and build. You know, we did a reading of it in a theater in New Jersey. I was very happy to have Annie aboard for that one. I'm right here. It's awesome. And so, yeah, that's moving. And then, you know, I have a background in film. And so right now we have a project that we're trying to build and cast right now. And that's a whole other beast to kind of tackle. But it's fun being in both worlds. They're similar, but yet very, very different, theater and film. And, you know, I enjoy it, you know, both sides, kind of finding the silver lining between the creative and the business. So yeah, that's what I've got going on in a nutshell, I guess you could say.
Very cool. Some wonderful things happening. Glad to hear about Shrimp Pudding. That was such a fun show to talk about. With all of you having some irons in the fire, that leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about your shows or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? Annie, why don't we start with you and your show, Soured Milk?
Yeah, so Soured Milk can be found in Program 14 at the Chain Theater. And if you go online and type in the code MILK in all caps, you can get a discount. So that's always fun. And then show dates are Friday the 23rd at 6:30, Saturday, August 24th at 8 p.m., Sunday, August 25th at 8 p.m. and Saturday, August 31st at 5 p.m. And then if you want to find more about me as a human or person, you could follow me on the Instagram at Annie Rasko, R-A-C as in cat, Z as in zebra, K-O, or on the Tickety Talks, because I, you know, saw all my young students dancing and I was like, what are you doing? And they're like, it's a TikTok thing. And so I started that as well.
Love it. Quinn, with your show Where the Socks Go, tell us more about that.
Oh yeah, you can find me Program 3. It's our last show coming up soon on the 22nd. That's this Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. We're Program number 3, discount code SOCKS. And yeah, that's gonna be our last show. We'll be doing a talk back and we'll also be recording that one and live streaming it. So last chance, it's going fast, people. If you want to know more about me, you can follow me on Instagram at Quinn_dadgummit. I don't post very much, but I usually post when I have a show going on consistently. And follow me. I make music also at mamster.music on Instagram and TikTok and Spotify. But yeah.
Kyle, tell us how we can get more information about Hangmen.
Sure. Well, it's in the same block as Annie, Program number 14. So, you know, see one, you see both. Program number 14, it is going up August 23rd, 24th, and 25th, and the 31st. You could see it just under the Chain's website, their one act festival. You could go right to it. If you want discount tickets, you know, hang, all in cap letters, H-A-N-G. And if you want to follow me, you could follow me on the Instagram at Kyle C. Mumford. Or you could check out my website, kylemumford.com.
Fabulous. And bringing us home, Lee, how can we get more information about online dates are hard to handle?
So we already had our opening. We have one show tonight at 8:30 and then another show on the 30th. Our discount code is DATES, all caps. We're program number one. And then you don't want to know me. I'll tell you when you want to know me.
I love that. Well, wonderful. Annie, Quinn, Kyle, Lee, thank you all so much for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing your wonderful works and energy and answers. And just thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was a blast.
My guests today have been several of the amazing artists involved with the Chain Theater One Act Festival, which is happening now through September 1st at the Chain Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting chaintheater.org. We also have some contact information, performance dates, promo codes, all of that fun information that we'll be posting in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But head over to thechaintheater.org right now. Get your tickets for the Chain Theater One Act Festival, playing now through September 1st. Make sure you check out today's shows, Soured Milk, Where the Socks Go, Hangman, and Online Dates Are Hard to Handle. And we also want to add for our American listeners that Election Day is November 5th. Make sure you are registered to vote, have a plan to cast your ballot, and do your democratic duty. You can find out how and where you can register to vote by visiting vote.gov. The future demands that we fight for it now. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to
turn off your cell phones,
unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.